This is Ozarks at Large. Marcos Villatoro loves stories, hearing them and telling them. He is a novelist, commentator for NPR, and a documentary filmmaker. His movie, Damale Road, a memoir from El Salvador, is a film about place, heritage, culture, and identity. He came to the University of Arkansas last week to screen the movie, and while he was in Northwest Arkansas, he came to the Carver Center for Public Radio to talk to Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums. Marcos told Kyle that the seeds for his movie were planted early in his life.
I come from two cultures. My mother's from El Salvador, and my father was from the Appalachian Mountains. My mother was more in the poetry, which I do write poetry, but my father was the storyteller. He was always, whenever at a party, he would say, if he said the three words, there was this here, well, actually, there was this, everybody would gather around him. And he would just tell these crazy hillbilly stories. And I loved that. And storytelling just became a weave in my childhood. And that's when I was 20 when I decided to write my first novel. And it's just telling a story. And so I love that. But I also loved movies. And the movie that we're showing tonight here at the university is called Damale Road. And it's a movie that we made in El Salvador. And one of the reasons is I just love the world of movies and making cinema, and I even teach classes on film and fiction just because I love it. I mean, and I'm afraid sometimes that we're going to lose that a little bit, going into theaters and sitting in crowds.
Well, there is something in storytelling, whether it's your father or a grandfather, or something about going into a theater where it's dark and it's still a community, but it's a very intimate.
Exactly.
And we don't have as much storytelling.
No.
Or it's still there. But there's so many other ways to hear a story that is not as intimate now.
Exactly, because I think through the internet, I think one thing I see is that today we are alone together. Because we talk on the internet and it's a virtual relationship, but we're alone when we do it, and yet we're together. And that's an interesting new concept that we're all getting used to. In the movie, you're together. And you're all focusing, and you're in this other world that somebody's created for you. And so even though you don't talk with each other, and I always reprimand the young people who have their cell phones out and their I don't even hesitate. But the movie theater, it's just wondrous. You know, it's just, it's wonderful.
But one of the things that the advanced technology has brought us is the ability, when I was a kid and 7 or 8, I was in rural Arkansas, and there was no way I would have ever had access to a movie made anywhere else, let alone El Salvador, or
right.
Let alone Ingmar Bergman. That just wasn't something
that wouldn't show up in your town, right?
It wouldn't be on the television. The one channel I got,
right.
It wouldn't be in the theater. Now we have access to so many. You don't have to live in a college town where someone brings a movie for a screening.
That's true. We do have more access because I have a friend who lives in a small town, and I said something about. This was years ago. I said, hey, have you ever seen Last Tango in Paris? And he said, I haven't even heard of that out here. He lived in Santa Claus, Indiana, and there just wasn't a lot of movie theaters there. So to have that access to really good movies and to be able to cut through the crud of movies that are made and really find those wondrous films that are being made by independent groups. And also the technology today, you can carry – when we filmed Damale Road, we filmed it in El Salvador, and at one point we walked 6 hours into an old war zone that it's not a war zone now, but it was the place where the guerrillas worked. And they had a radio station that they were – just like you have here that they worked out of a cave in. And this radio station was heard all through Latin America. And so we walked in there, but you can imagine 10 years ago carrying a 30-pound camera on your shoulder through 6 hours of jungle. We had a small a Canon film, and it's digital tape, and it was lighter. But even that was, you know, so big. It was like a foot long. Today they have these cameras that are just fit in your hand, and the HD quality is incredible. It's just you can make – today people can make movies. It's still expensive, but you can get a hold of this miniature cameras that have brought us to this point. So I don't want to disparage completely, you know, the internet world, because it's amazing what – many young people are doing with this new technology and creating films, short documentaries that they could never have done years ago.
When you come with a copy of your film for a screening to a college campus, are you hoping to inspire other filmmakers?
Other filmmakers, but one of the major themes of the movie is who are you, and specifically with culture. So what many young people, in fact, our demographic right now that we see is that the majority of people watching this movie are between 18 and 28. So it's a young audience, and many of them are struggling with that question, especially in college. Take a Latina woman, and she's here, the University of Arkansas, and she's from a very Latino culture, and she wants to go out into the world with a career. And sometimes a Latina will think that they have to be bifurcated, you know, cut in two. Well, that was you pigeonholed your culture, and then you go to college. Whereas the movie's showing that you're all of it. You're all of it. You're Latina, and that's one of your powers. You speak two languages. That's one of your powers. Take that with you into your career. And so that's a focal point of this movie. It's about El Salvador, but it's also about, well, my own struggle. You know, when I was born Latino in San Francisco, we moved to Tennessee. Nobody spoke Spanish. I lost my Spanish. I regained it again as a late teenager. And that was a lot of that is in the movie.
What led to regaining that?
I had an uncle in Mexico who kicked my butt because when he found me at age, we met when I was 17, and the first thing he said to me was, first of all, he spoke to me in Spanish, and I said, huh? And he said, ay, puchica, bojo cuanaco y no te conoces, which means, good Lord, you're a Salvadoran and you don't even know it? And he shamed me into learning my language. Actually, he ticked me off. And he just kept pushing me and pushing me. And if it weren't for my uncle, Paco, I don't think I would have followed this road. And also my mother, she raised me in East Tennessee. She raised me with tortillas, beans, rice, carne asada. And then my dad, sometimes on Sunday mornings, we would have grits and tortillas on the same plate. So the two cultures would come together. But I always had it there. It was even in Tennessee, we had this little enclave of El Salvador that my mother made for us. And I think that was the other reason that I really wanted to return to my culture.
And that's great. There is a long history in the United States of families coming here and trying to separate their culture, or having their children, whether it be Irish, German, whatever, trying to assimilate. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that it has swung the other way for so many people.
It's happening more that, especially the first generation U.S. citizen with Latino background, there's still the ability to go back. When you're five or six generations, that's really difficult. But still, many people from Irish descent, you see this movement of, I really want to appreciate where my people came from, even though it was five generations ago or four generations ago. And that people want to find out who they are. Even isn't there a place called Ancestry.com?
There is, yeah.
And people are flocking to that because they want to know through their personal history of their family who they are. And I think that's one of the most important questions that we can ask while we're here.
We've talked about culture. Let's talk about generations, because you're talking that a majority of people seeing the film are 28 or younger, younger than you, by a couple of decades.
Decades, yes, yes.
What is the struggle for someone in their 50s to talk to someone who is in their late teens or their 20s?
That's a great question. The first thing that came to mind is you've heard the old saw that the older you get, the harder it is to learn a language. And that can be true. I think it's most of the time it's true because you've had to work for 50 years, for instance, to be where you are, wherever that is. And I don't think it's a lost opportunity. I do know people around our age who really struggle to come back to who they are. But it is more difficult because you've, first of all, for a Latino who's a United States citizen, you've been in the United States and you've had to work in that, and you want to work in that because this is our country. This is the country I love. I was born here. But younger folks still feel that, you know, when you're 19 or 20 and you're in college, you know, sometimes have you seen students who try to fit in at the same time they recognize this past, so they're still really close to the question. And I think that's why so many people are young who are watching this movie, or who are young and looking for novels, actually, that speak of their own or their own situation, not being just, you know, the Latino cholo, you know, the cholo barrio, man, I'm from the barrio, I'm one of you. But to say, wait a minute, I'm U.S. Latino, and I want to know in more depth what that means.
Of course, it can mean different things if you are in San Francisco or if you're in Danville, Arkansas, much like it would be different if you
exactly.
were any other heritage.
Exactly. In the cities, you have more opportunity to get to. I live in Los Angeles, and so it's just a mix of everybody. I live in a Salvadoran neighborhood, but it's also Salvadoran Armenian. and you know, those mixes are just, along with finding your own roots, many young people will realize you will meet other people of other roots, from European roots to Bangladesh roots, Ethiopian, in a city like Los Angeles. And I also think in the major cities, San Francisco, Chicago, New York, you have that opportunity. Out in the countryside, I have friends who are migrant workers who've come, and their children are here, and they're struggling in Iowa, in a small town, to find out what that means.
Well, yes, if you live in a bigger city where already there is a diverse population,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, I'm making a generalization here, it can be easier mm-hmm. to fit in. But if suddenly you are part of a culture that didn't exist in a small mm-hmm. town before, and now you do, that can be tougher.
Exactly. And I think that's why in my childhood I was living in Rogersville, Tennessee, in a town of 5,000 people. And it was a lovely town, and I loved my childhood there. But there wasn't Latinoness there. You know, as one of my cousins would say, no había raza, hombre. There wasn't raza. There weren't roots there. And so that messes with you.
Do you think you were aware of that? Were you aware of that as a child?
Well, in southern white United States, in Tennessee, you know, my mother stuck out like a Latino thumb, right? And I did too, because, you know, I was half and half, as it were. And so my mother was the brown woman and I was the off-brown kid, you know, right? But I didn't get hassled for that and all. But there was an awareness that there was something different in our family that didn't exist anywhere else in the town. And actually, that was okay. In fact, I think that might have helped me to the awareness of, let's look for that difference, what that makes you who you are.
And it did make you who you are.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And in fact, right now, I mean, I write novels. I'm mostly a novelist, not a movie maker. And they might be really Latino focused, but I usually always have a Southerner in there. And now I'm moving toward telling stories about my Southern roots, which is it's just a lot of fun. Because it is, you can imagine, the Appalachian Mountains. Or like in Arkansas, you have a very feel here that it's Southern. You know, I can feel it while I'm here. It feels very comfortable. And there are so many stories that come out of the South and the rural areas that I'm now tapping into.
After a screening, do you take questions?
I do. The first thing that people usually ask, because the name of the movie is Tamale Road, because the essence or the center of the movie is bringing my tamales to these small towns in El Salvador to gain the trust of the people. And the first people usually ask is, where are the tamales? Are you going to serve tamales? But the other thing is that people really want to know more about Salvadoran culture, which you don't hear much about anymore. When people think of El Salvador, they think about the gangs, they think about death squads, they think about all this violent stuff. Whereas the movie shows that part and also shows how people survive through their culture.
Can I ask one last possibly stupid question?
There are no, you know, as a professor, you're supposed to say, there are no stupid questions.
Oh, but you know that there are some, yes. Those of us who are in the press who have, you know, European, Irish, German heritage, when we say a country name like El Salvador, we say it like I just did.
Uh-huh.
I grew up in rural Arkansas. When you say it, you say
El Salvador.
Which, if you already hear someone like me on the radio, what would you prefer?
That's not a stupid question at all, because I go back and forth. I switch. It's like they call it code switching. I don't know why they call it that. I call it Spanglish. And it just depends upon what rhythm I'm doing. If I'm imitating my father, if he's saying something like, man, you know, there's some kyarn on the road. Kyarn is dead roadkill. Uh-huh. There's some kyarn on the road. It just reminds me what it was like in El Salvador when we'd walking around. And if I hauled off and said, man, there's some kyarn on the road, and it just reminded me about El Salvador, where we found the same thing going on. Well, it doesn't work. And I use El Salvador, too. You know, I'm in between the two. I remember during the 80s, I loved listening to the BBC because we lived in Nicaragua, and you'd hear the BBC people going, and now we are going to turn to a story in Nicaragua. And we all thought, well, that's a heck of a more interesting way of saying it than anywhere. So, yeah, so I switch back and forth.
All right. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, it was wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Marcos Villatoro is a writer, commentator for NPR, and documentary filmmaker. He was on the University of Arkansas campus last week to show his movie, Damale Road, a memoir from El Salvador. And while he was here, he talked to Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums. You can find out more about him at Marcos Villatoro, that's V-I-L-L-A-T-O-R-O.com.